From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. Advocates for supervised injection sites say they save lives. They offer a place for people struggling with addiction to inject drugs with medical professionals present. They make sure nobody overdoses, and they help people get treatment. The city of Philadelphia supports Safe House, the nonprofit planning to open a supervised injection site here. But Safe House is facing a lawsuit from the federal government, who says the site is illegal. But even if Safe House is able to overcome legal hurdles, they have another big challenge in front of them, getting the community on board. That battle is happening in Kensington, the proposed location of Safe House, and the neighborhood with the most overdose deaths. Residents there have opposed the plan from the start.
We, the residents of our community that pay taxes, we will not tolerate this in our neighborhood for our children.
If Safe House has the support of the city, why haven't they been able to convince neighbors? And how might they be changing tactics now? Today on The Why, the case for Safe House. WHYY reporter Nina Feldman covers the opioid crisis in Philadelphia. Nina, why are community members against Safe House?
So I spoke with Shannon Farrell. She's lived in Kensington her entire life, and she's the head of the Harrogate Neighborhood Association. And they've come out in opposition of the proposed supervised injection site from the start.
In our opinion, that would keep dealers in business who are very violent in our neighborhood and have shot children, in some cases, sadly killed them.
Shannon's really worried about public safety, and she's afraid that a site like this in her neighborhood would pretty much solidify and contain crime there.
We cannot sidestep the safety of our kids and the people that have to live and work there. And almost everybody is affected by this, and nobody wants them to pass away. We do not want them to overdose and die. But we're tired of being the risk, you know, we're like the collateral damage.
So Shannon recently led a community meeting about Safe House, and this woman, Marissa Perrone, attended, and she and her husband, Joe Piscatello, they support Safe House, but they don't live in the neighborhoods. What's their involvement?
Yeah, Marissa and Joe have a 24-year-old son who has struggled with addiction.
Even though our son right now is 2 years sober, we know recovery is like an hour-by-hour, day-by-day thing.
When Antonio was in active use, you know, I remember him leaving our house in the neighborhood and going off into the night, and we knew he was in Kensington. And there were nights that we literally would hope that if he was overdosing, that somebody would find him. You know, where is he? What is he under? Is he near people, or is he just going to die tonight?
Marissa and Joe talked about how having a facility like this would have made them rest a lot easier. They would have just known that their son was under the supervision of somebody while he was using heroin, and in case he overdosed, someone would have been there to be able to reverse it and hopefully prevent him from dying. And Marissa was really surprised by the level of opposition she heard to Safe House, and she felt like her side of the conversation, the one supporting it, was just totally missing. So she decided to host her own meeting.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jose. You know, this reminds me of the early HIV days when we were all in rooms together trying to figure out how to not lose people.
So the meeting was at Joe's law firm in Society Hill, and the room was full of people who support Safe House. So the board members of Safe House were there, as were activists and advocates and doctors and lawyers and people who work on the ground with people struggling with addiction in Kensington. And then there were a lot of people like Marissa and Joe whose kids have struggled with addiction, and a lot of parents and family members who've had kids who've died of overdoses.
How do we lift up those voices of support and say, well, you know, actually there are some benefits to the Safe House?
You know, it was sort of this conversation about, like, how do we change the message to make it clear that our goals are the same as the community's goals, which is get public injection off the streets, overall reduce drug use. We all want the same things. Like, how do we talk about this in a different way so people understand that, right?
Nina, what were some of the ideas that people had for how to get that message across?
One lawyer in town, Stephen Lachine, who is friends with Marissa and Joe.
My first suggestion would be that the first thing you ought to do is get rid of the name Safe House.
He didn't like the name?
No, he said Safe House conjures the wrong image for people, and it's not doing them any favors in their sort of marketing.
This ought to be a community center, is what it ought to be called.
And, you know, Marissa suggested a kind of promotional campaign. It almost sort of felt like a Mythbusters idea, like let's put out a bunch of promotional videos on YouTube or run sort of PSAs.
So it sounds like they're trying to rebrand. And was that sort of the takeaway, that they're going to take some of these rebranding steps?
So not exactly. It got a little bit more complicated than that. I think that's sort of how the conversation started, like let's educate and craft a narrative that's more palatable. But they had a lot of people in the room who have spent a lot of time in Kensington, or still do, who were a little bit uneasy with that just being the change in tact. Bill Kinkle, who's a nurse who is in recovery, who spent a lot of time in active addiction in Kensington and also lived there with his wife, Trish, and their family, his sense was that the first step is to really listen to the residents of Kensington and take their concerns seriously.
You need to be really careful with a campaign like this, because it sounds like the same thing. You just don't understand, so we're going to tell you again. Mm-hmm. What I really think the community needs to hear is that their issues have validity. I think we need to listen a lot more than we tell them, because I'm not sure that the facts really matter when there's so much emotion and the complexity of Kensington.
Can I ask just a follow-up? Sorry. So I think that that's exactly right.
That's Rhonda Goldfein. She's a board member of Safe House.
And so when we were at that meeting and everybody was angry, we understood why people were angry. And, you know, Jose and I, for those of you who were there, you saw, we stood there for more than an hour just taking a lot of anger, and that was fine. So what is the way to do it? How do we say, we understand, for example, we understand you are so angry about public consumption, and we have a solution. How do we get that across?
This is what Trisha and I spend, I mean, I probably annoy her every day trying to think about this. And I have conversations with people all the time. I don't know.
How do we make people feel heard and valued? That's a tough one.
There were some people at the meeting who work on the ground in Kensington. What did they have to say about this?
Yes. Carol Rostisher and Roz Pichardo live in Kensington, and they work with people there who are in active addiction.
The huge meetings where everybody's there, you're going to have these loudmouths that are going to scream out and bellow about all the negativity, which takes over the meeting. Personally, when I speak with community, like, I speak with one-on-one or in a small group.
Carol told this story about a conversation she had with a pastor sitting next to her at one of the public meetings about Safe House. And as the representatives were talking about all the different things that Safe House would do, the pastor leaned over to Carol and whispered,
Carol, I didn't know this. I said, well, wait a minute, what are you hearing? And what she is hearing is all the falsities about Safe House.
And Roz has been having those one-on-one conversations too. She gave out flyers on her block and even invited people over for dinner to answer any questions they might have about Safe House.
And there was just all this stuff. They didn't know that doctors were going to be there. They didn't know they were going to be receiving services or treatment. They just didn't know. It worked for me to educate the few people that I did, but, you know, I'm only one person.
Roz and Carol, I mean, as we talked about, are on the ground every day, dealing directly with people one-on-one. But most of the people in that meeting aren't in that position. So how realistic is a grassroots strategy like this?
That definitely came up, and there was some discomfort around it. Bill Kinkle made that point.
The majority of us are white folks sipping wine mm-hmm. a couple miles down the road, telling that neighborhood what they need to have. And I don't think that's necessarily fair.
But, you know, a lot of the people there really did feel like they had a right to speak up about this. They themselves had kids who had struggled with addiction, and, you know, some of them had kids who had died of overdoses. So they kind of just felt like if anybody has a right to speak up for a site that could have saved my kid's life, it's me.
Because it's not an us and them. We're all affected. It's like air pollution. You know, there are no boundaries.
A So what was the tone in the room at this point? It sounds like it had changed from just like a strategy meeting to like almost a reality check for a lot of these people. So what was the tone like?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It got a lot more complicated. You had a group of people that started out saying, you know, how are we going to launch this new public education campaign? And by the end of the night, I think they were asking, how do we launch a community organizing campaign? So I think the general sense was, this is a heavier lift, but at least, you know, it doesn't mean banging our head against a brick wall anymore.
You're going to save lives in this area and across the country because this is going to happen. It's going to happen because of the goodwill of all of you.
We appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
So as the night wrapped up, my question that I was left with was, where does this group go from here? What happens next? And I chatted with Bill and Trish Kinkle after the discussion to try to get a sense of how they were feeling. Again, they used to live in the neighborhood, and Bill used to struggle with addiction.
Yeah, this is what we talk about all the time, that if we still live there, and this was going to be across the street or down the street, how would we feel about it? And I don't know. I fully support Safe House, and I fully support a safe injection site. But as a father of young kids, there's potentially increased crime. There is potentially more people congregating around. You know, the concerns of the community about people selling drugs in the periphery, like, those are all valid concerns.
Bill is much more concerned about it than I am. I was faced every day for over 2 years with the idea of my husband possibly not coming home. And that pushes away all of those other concerns. Like, Bill will say, well, I don't know, you know, if it was across the street from us, I don't know. And in my mentality is like, I don't care. If it means you come home, it can be across the street. If it means you come home, it can be in my backyard.
So like disagreement even within this one couple who both showed up to this meeting.
Right. This is a group of the staunchest supporters and the most vocal advocates coming together to, you know, try to figure out a way to push this thing forward. And even within that subgroup, you have disagreement and ambivalence and uncertainties. So I think that really showed what a complicated issue this is and why there's so much at stake for both parties. You know, it's really a matter of life or death for everybody who's involved.
Thank you, Nina.
Yeah, thanks so much.
The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. We had editing help on this episode from Eugene San. Tweet me at Shai Ben-Yaakov. We'll be back tomorrow.